Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
All right. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you could join us today. Davis,
Yes.
So I've been trying to compile a complete list of the new crush capacity that is either planned, construction has started, blueprints are finalized, announcements. Mm-hmm. If you throw all of those into one basket, all right? Okay. And I'm not saying that they're all going to happen. The expansion and the new plants and everything, we're pushing 550 million bushels of demand that's coming to the market, which just happens to be about the amount of soybeans that Brazil just cut from, that CONAB cut from the Brazilian bean crop estimate. And look at the kind of price reaction that you get from it.
Uh-huh.
So adding 500 million bushels of consistent domestic demand to a market, holy smokes, it changes everybody's life. Everybody's. It's crazy. Okay. Another guy that's going to be on the stage Tuesday morning at the Top Producer Summit in Nashville is Jackson Takich. He is the chief economist for Farmer Mac, and he joins us right now. Jackson, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Doing well, Chip. Happy to be with you today.
I'm glad that you are. So Your presentation, it's going to kick it off on Tuesday morning for us down there. Seeing through the fog, how global economic forces will impact U.S. ag in 2022. A couple of things from the title. Why the reference to the fog, Jackson? Are you saying that there isn't much clarity on the economic outlook for the year ahead?
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. And fog is something that we've been dealing with in all facets of economic life. From personal life all the way down to central bank expectations for the last 2.5 years. So yeah. I think we're still seeing a little bit of fog, but I think one of the things I'm going to talk about is what are the things that we can start to see through. We're getting maybe clearer vision to open skies ahead, but we may need some assistance.
Right. We'll get to some of those, but I want to stay on the title because the other one that I look at and I just think, my goodness. How do you even know which global economic force to start with potential impacts to ag in 2022? There's a long list of items to choose from.
Absolutely. And, for me, it all starts with demand. What are consumers demanding and how healthy is the economy in our top trading partners, right? So, as much as I never want to say COVID again in my entire life, if I get to a place where I never have to say the word COVID again, I'll be a happy man. But it's still hanging around out there. And we got to talk about, hey, this is going to maybe impact some of the recoveries that we're seeing in those foreign markets. That's going to impact how much animal protein, how many fruits and vegetables, the trade picture. I mean, all of that flows right back down to the farm finances. So, for me, it stops and starts with the consumer. That's where I always start my journey. And maybe the second stop is for sure in input prices and costs.
Right. Let's stay with the consumers. And the whole world's getting a look inside of China again right now at the Winter Olympics. And there's some positive stories coming out of the Olympics. There's some not so positive stories about conditions inside of China. But when we talk about consumers, you got to focus on that country. Just how economically stable are they for the year ahead?
Yeah, I'd say it's not going to be the same sort of recovery that it was experienced in 2021. So most economists are looking at something like a 4-5% GDP, real GDP growth rate. One nice thing I think in China is the prices are fairly stable. So, we don't have the same level of CPI or inflation rates that maybe we do here or some other more developed countries do. So there's some positive signs that the GDP print number that's likely to come out of China this year. But it's certainly a far cry from the 8-10% that we got maybe used to a few years ago and got back to in 2021. So, you know, certainly looking at something a little bit less than what you might expect out of an emerging market economy.
All right. Catherine Tai, trade representative, is there right now saying, listen, the trade agreement that was struck with the Trump administration is a real thing. What do you think her odds are of success of getting China refocused on that trade agreement?
Well, you know, that's a tough call because there's probably a lot of, support to continue doing trade negotiations and, you know, to at least say like, hey, yes, we value this trade relationship. We need the products that you're shipping and we need you as a trading partner. I think there's probably good chance of getting some positive talk out of it. But as you know, I mean, some of these things are very difficult to enforce. You kind of get a couple of years down the road and you say, hey, we missed it. We tried hard, but you know, you can't make up markets where they don't exist. So COVID happened. That was a difficult thing to predict and nay, impossible. Going back to say 2018, 2019. Yeah. So, you know, it becomes a very difficult thing to enforce. I expect there to be some good positive outcomes from those negotiations, but maybe not a, hey, we're just going to buy every bushel of corn just because we said we would, because that's not really market-based trade either.
Yep. I get it. That's right. Let's come here to the U.S. Inflation in January, 7.5%. But from the farmer's perspective, 7.5%, in a lot of cases, they would appreciate inflation of just 7.5%, Jackson. You referenced the income prices or input prices earlier. It's a crazy kind of market for us, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Fortunately, it's isolated to a few categories that are really, they're really driving up those input prices. I mean, anything related to energy right now, it's just expensive relative to where we were. I mean, I think we all got used to gasoline prices during the pandemic. You know, nobody's really driving. Some of that production was stopped, you know, along the oil production and natural gas production. So some of those wells, you know, essentially capped off. And we got kind of used to maybe lower prices because demand was so low. So now, you know, in my area, I'm out in Washington, D.C. I'm looking at, you know, $3.30, $3.40 for a gallon of gasoline, and I'm not very used to that. I know farmers are feeling the same pinch when they're buying diesel or gasoline out there all across the country. So, you know, these are big shocks, in particular as it flows through to fertilizer costs, right? So even if you can get your fertilizer, which some people, you know, that could be a challenge too. You know, even the supply to deliver orders already taken is somewhat challenged in certain parts. But let's say you're able to get it, it's expensive. And a lot of that is driven by higher energy prices, global energy prices, natural gas being the primary driver there. And just, you know, some geopolitics that aren't very friendly right now.
Right.
It all kind of bubbled up. I'll have a nice chart in Tuesday's discussion, just looking at what are the points along that fertilizer price run-up that drove and continued to sort of almost just boulder, right? It's the boulder kept rolling and developing more and more pressure. And, you know, with any luck, you see some of those energy prices come back down. $100 oil becomes a pretty good enticement to get production back online. So you see oil start to creep up to 90 bucks. That's when I think you see a lot more supply come into the marketplace and hopefully calm some things. Yeah. Plus, we get out of winter in the Northern Hemisphere. I think that's going to help out tremendously. But it's not going to help us out, you know, in June, right? So, you know, we're kind of dealing with these prices right now. And I know it's a pretty serious sticker shock. Maybe one final area I see a lot of discussion on for input prices, just the cost of land. You know, land values really skyrocketed in the Midwest and along the West Coast and South, too, this 2021. That drives up price. It drives up the cost of borrowing. So, if, you know, Farmer Mac, we're looking at farm real estate loans every single day. And, you know, you're seeing those costs start to creep up just because it costs more to buy an acre of ground than it did 2 years ago. And that's going to sort of snowball into higher rental rates. It doesn't happen right away, but as land values go up, it's going to drive up the rental rates too. So that's another sort of step towards those higher input prices. And I got to say, you know, looking at the futures board, thank goodness for, you know, $6.55 corn and $16 beans, because those are going to be pretty necessary to continue to ink profits at some of these input price levels.
Yeah, no question about it. No question. On the land prices, expectations of higher interest rates, I don't know if I've ever seen a slam dunk on an expectation for the for interest rates before, but they're going to be higher at the end of this year than what they are right now, right?
Yeah. I mean, I can almost say that with certainty. Just looking at the probabilities for the Fed raising its sort of, policy rate, the Fed funds rate. I mean, right now there's 100%. So the market is betting 100%, all the chips on the table. There's going to be a raise in March. Now, how much is that raise? That was the big news today with the CPI print, the inflation print. How much is that raise going to be? Everyone was kind of saying 25 basis points or a quarter of a percent. And now it's 50-50. Is it going to be 25 or 50 basis points? So that's a big switch to the market expectations of just how much those short-term rates are going to rise. Now, that's going to go directly to the cost of operating expenses. So, I mean, that's linked, probably with about a year lag. So I think a lot of bankers have probably already priced their loans, production loans for the year. But next year, that's certainly, for every basis point that Fed funds rate goes up, it increases the operating costs for the farmers. Now, the long end may take a little bit longer. Right now it's a really flat yield curve. So the long end is not quite rising as fast. So I think there's still some time to do some balance sheet management so farmers can maybe fix their interest rate costs a little bit, restructure, and still take advantage of very low interest, even though, hey, it's up half a point or even a point in some places. That's still a very low interest rate compared to 10 years ago. So there's still a lot of opportunities there.
Yes, yes, absolutely, no doubt. Well, for an economy nerd like me, I am really looking forward to your presentation down there next week, Jackson. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Chip. Looking forward to it.
All right, that is Jackson Takich. He is the chief economist for Farmer Mac. All right, when we come back, Indigo is making some moves. Let's hear about it right next, right here, AgriTalk.